to Poland, which seems to be entering something of a long dark night politically, just as it was basking in the glow of widespread applause for the state of its democracy. Big protests across possibly 220 Polish cities, that's the estimate, have thundered their opposition to government laws to dismiss the judiciary. Then, this Monday, the president, Andrzej Duda, announced that he would veto two of those three laws passed by the parliament. The population was, it seems, gobsmacked. This is against a backdrop of fears that a new right-wing Eastern European bloc is forming between Poland, Hungary and Slovakia, which seems to challenge the established rules and spirit of the EU. So what is going on and what might come next? Martin Krygier has been closely watching Poland for years, both from his base in Australia and his regular visits there to teach. His parents are Polish. He's Professor of Law and Social Theory at the University of New South Wales. Welcome, Martin. What do you think might come next?
Well, come next is the hardest thing. We know until Monday when Duda vetoed two laws, it looked like the kind of relentless progression. It was pretty clear that the real ruler of Poland, a man called Kaczyński, who has no official position except he's an elected parliamentarian, but he's not president, he's not premier, he runs the show.
He's the Svengali.
Yeah, and he was piece by piece drawing power into the hands of his party in the media, and in particular he had an assault which has been going on for a year and a half against the courts. And the three laws that you just mentioned were maybe not the culmination, because we don't know what else he'd do, but they were a major step in this move. And until Monday, last Monday, it looked as though this was unstoppable. He pushed it through Parliament, three laws were through Parliament, but then they needed to be signed by the President. And on Monday, to everyone's surprise, because the president was only installed as president to be a puppet of Kaczyński, of the real ruler. And the worm turned, and he vetoed two of the laws. The third, which is also not a nice law, he let go. Everybody in Poland is trying to understand it. And it's pretty clear that the government wants to keep going, that they want to keep drawing power into their hands. But what's come out of these protests that you mentioned in the last week, which are unprecedented in recent history in Poland, is that they may have overplayed their hands. And at last, young people who weren't involved in earlier protests have become involved. And now it's going to be a play of strength for a while until things settle.
Well, I have heard it, or read that, to try to understand it, there's a sort of move to paternalistic authoritarianism, close to something that Salazar did in Portugal, for three decades, from about 1950 to 1980. Do you think that's fair?
Look, it's early days. It's clear that the intention of Kaczyński, the Svengali, as you put it, and for his party, is to draw power to them, in particular to get rid of independent sources of blockage. And he hates the courts, though he's a lawyer himself.
And the courts do, I gather, date back to the communist era.
A couple were formed in the 80s. The Constitutional Tribunal was formed in the 80s, and the High Court, the Supreme Court. And, of course, there are courts, so everything dates. But his initial complaint in the early 90s was that they were stuffed with holdovers from the communist period. And there was truth in that, as there was in many institutions. The average age in the courts now is 38. So they would have had to be 10 years old in the communist period, these average judges. So that's not completely plausible. There are lots of things to complain about in the justice system, but what is clear is that his is a bid for power. When he came into power in October 2015, he went after the Constitutional Tribunal, he packed it and he emasculated it. His strategy is either you break it or you take it over or you do both. But it's too early to compare it with Salazar, because at the moment, Poland has this vibrant civil society, as we've seen.
And with the whole question of the sort of, well, the Westminster, you know, the judiciary, the executive and the legislature, all separate, all acting as checks and balances.
Well, they aren't, because, I mean, he has already He's got rid of the Constitutional Tribunal, and these laws were intended to emasculate the courts, or at least, sorry, to give his government control over appointment to these courts.
And isn't that also crucial? Because another one of the arguments is that he seeks really a form of sort of a crony, democracy, authoritarianism, where he puts his people and they're promised jobs in the government, which are safe, perceived as safe jobs.
Absolutely.
And then you fundamentally change the society.
Yeah, one of the things which I think is his big sin is he doesn't think about institutions. For him, we get our people in or they've got their people in. And so his attitude to reforming the courts is not to reform the institutions, but to get his people in, get rid of people who are against him.
Just tell us a little more about him, please.
Well, many listeners will remember that this strange combination, twins, identical twins, who at one point were president and premier of, that is, president and prime minister of Poland. Tragically, in 2010, there was the plane crash of a plane which kept the president plus 90-odd high government officials in Smolensk, or near Smolensk, on the east of Poland in Russia, and all of those people were killed. And his brother, who was the dominant brother even then, now has a kind of vengeful hatred of his opponents. He also, since you mentioned that your later program is going to be on populism, he, like the Hungarian Prime Minister Orban, who started this move to take over the independent institutions, he started in 2010, are populists of true dye. That is, they see the world as being them and us, friend and enemy. They're the representatives of the people, which is not all the Poles, it's just those who voted for them. The rest are...
And they only just got in, didn't they, this
Well,
time?
Not by the... The president only just got in 2015, but by the time of parliamentary elections, they got a significant majority, though they only got 38% of the vote, they got 53 or something like that percent of seats. They didn't have, though, unlike Orban in Hungary, they didn't have a constitutional majority. That is, they didn't have two-thirds, which in Hungary allows Orban to change the constitution whenever he likes. They can't do that, so they're doing all sorts of tricksy manoeuvres, which looked like being unstoppable until Monday.
What do you think the president's doing?
Look, it's so hard. He was put in as a puppet and he behaved as a puppet, doing whatever he was told for a year and a half. But there is a remarkable satirical program, In the Ear of the Leader, it's called in Poland, the leader being Kaczynski. And it had this figure, Adrian, who is Duda, who was just this mouse. And everyone loved it in Poland. And there was this sense that he is not an independent figure. He's got to run for re-election in 2020. So there's that issue. There's also, he was being treated as a subaltern and it seems to have got up his nose. So that, from a distance, might be an explanation. I think it's plausible because it's clear that his vetoes have upset the president. More conspiratorial theorists say, well, maybe there's a game going. They put out these very tough laws. The European Commission gets interested. Then Duda vetoes them. Maybe that will be to get the heat off. In any event, his veto is not forever. He says he's going to prepare amended laws in the next 2 months, and we'll see what they...
Duda has said that, yes.
He's going to put them forward within 2 months and they will go to Parliament. Presumably he won't veto them, but of course Kaczynski may not like them. But we don't know that yet.
Okay, just two things. I also read, thinking of populism, that there's almost perceived as a Poland A and Poland B at the moment. So you've got your people, it's the, sort of the classic story, people who are comfortable roughly with globalisation, so you can tell me if I'm wrong, and the people who are Poland B, who feel they are the have-nots.
Yes.
And so there's this real bifurcated society.
There is, absolutely. There is. And Poland A, Poland B partly maps onto Poland West, Poland East. It maps onto places where there were industries like coal, steel, which no longer go. Poland, in macro terms, has done better than any country in Eastern Europe and virtually any country in Europe. It didn't have a recession when everyone had a recession. On the other hand, within Poland, there are these dramatic divisions, resentments, and the sorts of things which have led to globalization in the world, which we still don't fully understand. Resentments, a sense, maybe not purely economic, ideological. And there's another thing about Eastern Europe which is important. In 89, people in many East European countries says, at last we can become normal countries. They thought, well, they'll be like Sweden or Germany or France, maybe America. Then there is this sense that things that mattered to us, the church to them, the church, traditional values, a slow pace of change, miserable conditions, but we knew what they were, everything becomes confused and to some people distasteful, and Kaczynski certainly works on that. So like Orban, he says, we're not part of Western Europe with its diluted morality and so on and so forth. We stand for our domestic traditional values. And that's why in a program on populism, which you'll have, they are key examples.
So the challenge is to the European Union, isn't it? Because they've really put their hands back and said, please, we wish this would all go away. But it is a challenge to European Union values.
It's a major challenge. In both cases, one of the fundamental values, if you worry about constitutional forms, it's in the Copenhagen Accords, is rule of law, quite apart from democracy, which is also in there. Both Hungary and Poland have just spat on the rule of law and keep spitting. That is, that the notion that the law might be a break or a taming of power is something that they're... It's not simply that they don't regard it well. That's what they're trying to undermine. And that's a fundamental European value. If you don't stand for that, it's not clear.
Now, the EU's put them on notice, hasn't it?
Well, notice of a sort. They kept putting Hungary on notice, and Hungary played the game, one step forward, two steps backwards. Actually, they did two steps forward, one step backwards. So they kept negotiating, but they kept doing what they were doing. The Poles thought that that's what they could do. And it may be, because another reason why Duda might have done what he did is not only the internal pressure, which was extraordinary. I mean, these demonstrations last week from nowhere, because there was not in recent Polish history a very strong civil interest in politics. And this just came up. It was strong. It was all over the place and it included young people.
Where's the church in all this, by the way?
Well, the church is a divided animal, but many of them are on the side of the government. Many of the hierarchy are on the side of the government, and that's another problem, from my point of view. But the momentum has changed, and Europe has to be interested in that. On the other hand, already they've said, look, some things have changed in Poland, but not all. There were three laws. Two are vetoed, one is not vetoed. And it's not a good law. It's one which gives power over appointment of the presidents of all the local courts to the government minister. The other two, we don't know how they're going, so they're watching. But what Europe hasn't done is take what they call the nuclear option, which is Article 7 of the treaty, the European Union treaty, which would potentially allow them to put sanctions, heavy sanctions, on these countries. So far they haven't done it. And we'll see.
Oh, Martin, that's a marvellous overview. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks,
we'll watch with interest.
Thanks.
Martin Krigier, Professor of Law and Social Theory at the University of New South Wales.